Welcome to Kidlit Classics, a podcast where children's authors, booksellers, and publishing professionals share the children's books that they love the most and that inspired them to follow their own path into the kidlit industry. I'm your host, Sam Ellen Bound, and today I'm chatting with Andrea Rowe. Andrea is a children's author, short story writer, copywriter, ex-radio announcer, founder of the Mornington Peninsula Writers Club, and many other things beside. Let me tell you, this woman does not stop. Her beautiful picture book, Jetty Jumping, recently won the CBCA Book of the Year for Early Childhood. Andrea, welcome to Kidlit Classics.
Thanks, Sam Ellen.
It's so very lovely to have you with us. So thank you so much for taking the time. So today, Andrea, you are going to be talking about two books, which I have allowed, but future podcast guests, don't go getting any ideas. But today we're going to talk about, two books. So we've got Colin Tilley's Storm Boy, which was published in 1964, and I'm sure that one needs no introduction. And we're also going to talk about Norman Lindsay's classic comic fantasy, The Magic Pudding, which was originally published in 1918. What a great little pair of Australian classics you've chosen.
They sure are. I think they're the nice juxtaposition of humour and connection with landscape as well.
Yeah, for sure. Can you please share with us the opening line of one of your books?
I'd love to read Storm Boy. So the opening line is, Storm Boy lived between the Coorong and the sea. His home was the long, long snout of sandhill and scrub that curves away southeastward from the Murray mouth.
So lovely, because I haven't read this book since I was in probably primary school, but I do remember all the beautiful descriptions of landscape and the real sense of, you know, respect for nature and the environment and everything. So that opening line really sets up what we're then going to read.
Absolutely. And I think even just the characteristic of the Coorong and this idea of this long snout, you know that you're sort of settling in for something special straight away.
Yeah. So can you please tell us a little bit more about The Magic Pudding and about Storm Boy? What are these books about? What happens in them?
Well, Storm Boy tells the story of a 10-year-old boy and his father, Hideaway Tom, who's a fisherman and quite a reclusive fisherman. And Storm Boy and his father live in an isolated corrugated iron shack next to a wildlife sanctuary. And the book really focuses on the relationship between Storm Boy and his father, a pelican named Mr. Percival, and an outcast Aboriginal man named Fingerbone, who he befriends. So it's a story really that's set in quite a kind of a windswept coastal community on the Southern Ocean. It addresses subjects like poachers and animal wildlife rescuing as well. And Storm Boy rescues three baby pelicans who he nurses back to health, Mr. Proud, Mr. Ponder and Mr. Percival. And he has a very special relationship with Mr. Percival. So that's the story of Storm Boy. And then the story of Magic Pudding is something a little bit more, completely out there, but hilariously humorous. It tells the story of a magic talking pudding named Albert, who no matter how often Albert is eaten, he always reforms to be eaten again, which I think is hilarious. So he's this anthropomorphic animal kind of characters are around him as well. He has these three companions, Bunyip Bluegum, Bill Barnacle and Sam Sawnoff. And it's this comic fantasy and, you know, they're always sort of pitching against these pudding thieves that are trying to take Albert from them as well. So there's a lot of high energy and high jinks and kind of old-fashioned language, but a lot of whimsy in the story as well. So two very different books, but very similar in that they embrace the essence of Australian characters and Australian landscape as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually read The Magic Pudding again recently, and it really sort of struck me as a sort of Australian version, an Australian mix of Alice in Wonderland and The Wind in the Willows. Just that whimsy and that celebration of the bizarre. You know, this is a story about protecting a pudding that can regenerate. Sorry. That, you know, that lovely sense of just whimsy, and, you know, there's songs and poems throughout it all. And so that's sort of what it reminds
And
me
I,
of.
absolutely, and I'm really glad you said the Wind in the Willows because it's always reminded me of that. I've always wondered if Norman Lindsay, who is the author and the illustrator, double the talent there, if he was as fascinated with Wind in the Willows and all of the adventures of Toad and his friends as well. I really like too that it really takes us to this very different place of writing. It's kind of got really different writing practices, and then it weaves in these rhymes and little ditties, and then sometimes it takes you off on this tangent with the magic pudding based on the moods of the characters and how they're traveling through the day as well. So, which is it was just a really cool thing to do.
Yeah, so much fun. A lot of fun. So that is what the books are about. Can you share with us why do you love them so much? Why are they so special to you?
Look, I'm going to attach a lot of affection, and I always will, to Storm Boy. For me, there's a gentle wildness in both the boy and the landscape, and it's something that I really connected with immediately. Now, I was born in 1970, the book came out in 1964. In my memory, it was one of the first books my dad would read to us as children at bedtime. So I also feel an attachment of companionship with Storm Boy as well. There's something very familiar in those early storytelling days with a parent. But I think it's my first conscious book where I understood how to write about landscape, or I thought about the landscape a little bit more, and I was actually able to see how we grew up mirrored back to me. Now, I was a coastal kid. I grew up in Warrnambool and then Western Australia, and every coast kid kind of related to Storm Boy growing up. We all built lean-tos in the dunes. We all flapped our hands along the shoreline chasing Mr. Percival. We all felt we ruled the beach as kids as well, and there was a wildness to us there. So Storm Boy was our Peter Pan in lots of ways. He certainly was my Peter Pan for me. I think the other wonderful thing that I reflect on now as an adult reading Storm Boy is that it probably was the first book where I was very aware of Indigenous relationships and respect and the gentle teaching of a character like Fingerbone. And also the traumas and challenges Fingerbone would have been enduring as well. Obviously, I look at that now with adult eyes, but as a child, I never questioned, and I was quite taken with this Aboriginal Australian character who was quite strong and stoic, and also almost very economic in his terminology as well. I really liked his character. For me too, Storm Boy was a story that brought in a lot of environmental concepts. So, there's themes of poaching, the fate of wildlife, the relationship that we have with landscapers and environment as well. So it was probably a really early echoing for me of connection with our environment and how we have that relationship as well. So it's probably been quite special there. If I had to talk about Magic Pudding for me again was a little bit like I grew up in the times of Blinky Bill, May Gibbs, Magic Pudding, all of these very sort of fantastical Australian stories. I again remember my parents reading the Magic Pudding and there being voices attributed to the very grouchy, grumpy pudding. So the premise of the grumpy pudding is just so ridiculous. And I remember as a kid, I never questioned it, but he was absolutely horrifyingly adorable. And you couldn't believe that a character would always be so grumpy and ridiculous, but he was always being protected by these lovely people, these lovely characters. So it was something very noble about the cause of saving the pudding and this whole noble society of pudding owners as well. So I think for me it was just a lot of lovely fantasy, but again in a landscape that I felt familiar with as well. So it wasn't this sort of faraway English scene, it was Australian.
Yeah, that's really great. And I'm glad that you mentioned about the Aboriginal representation, because when I read this book, it was when I was in primary school in the 90s. And although today we have so much beautiful Indigenous Australian literature, picture books, middle grade actually coming up to what in YA, the representation is great and it's long overdue. But perhaps in the 90s, I certainly don't remember reading, about Aboriginal Australian fiction stories very much. So this Stormboy for me was also sort of that insight, and so beautifully done and with such, like you said, gentle reverence. And so I think that was, and even when it was released in the 1960s, that would have been probably even more amazing then.
Exactly. And I think Colin Tilley, by virtue of the fact living in South Australia and being quite in tune to the Coorong community, would have been rightly so in tune to the Indigenous communities and their respect and interaction with the environment as well. So it came across so beautifully and reverently as well.
Yeah. So, Andrea, we've spoken about this a little bit, how you read both of these books actually when you were a child, and how they, especially Storm Boy, spoke to you, as a coastal kid, and how you saw some of yourself in those stories. Do you also, have these two books also influenced you in your own writing?
Definitely. Storm Boy for me probably informs a lot of, I can't but not help write about the coastline. I write short stories and children's picture books. I'm currently trying to write a YA novel that's actually set in the sand dunes where I live. I'm a coastal girl, and I do find that I'm still drawn to Colin's writing. I'm trying not to read it because I don't want it to inform my writing in any way as well. For me, though, I had the wonderful opportunity as a kid to meet Colin. I was selected to go to a school event called Readers Write Around at Werribee Park Mansion in the, it would have been the late 70s or possibly the very, yeah, it would have been, I would have been grade six, I think. And he was a very gentle, quiet, observant writer, and I think I came away just in awe of this person that had written Storm Boy and Bluefin and other stories that I wrote as well. So I was just quite in awe of his presence and also his observations. He must have said something, said a few words to me that stayed with me, but for me, I guess it's all wrapped up in the fact that he was my first author interaction as well as a child, and that was something that has really stayed with me for a long time too.
That's so beautiful to know, because I think when children come up to me and they're a little bit, nervous or in awe, and it's so funny because honestly, I just feel like, I'm the biggest, awkward loser. There's, absolutely no reason to be in awe. I'm so normal and so just like you. But children, if they do, especially if they love books or they love reading or writing, meeting authors is so special and so memorable, and it's so beautiful that you have such a good experience that then went on to inspire you. So mm-hmm. beautiful to hear.
Yeah, and I think he has always been my touchstone as a writer as well there. So it is something I'm mindful of when I meet younger children as well. And I think we all need to, as writers, be mindful of that too.
Absolutely. So is there a particular character or scene in either of these two books that made a real lasting impression on you?
Sure. I think with Storm Boy, obviously it's Fingerbone is such a great character, but the boy, for me, it was always about Storm Boy and this boy caught between the two worlds of town life and normal school, and then this sense of self that he certainly had and peacefulness about himself, being in the outdoors and claiming the ocean and the landscape as his own as well. So, and I think too, he had Colin Tilley gave permission for Storm Boy to really be honest with his emotions. So there was a lot of grief in the book as well, and just quiet observation. You know, the mother is not present in the book. There are other scenes in which there's interaction with poachers and things like that. So probably for me, I really liked the space, the emotional space that Storm Boy sort of took me into. I do have a favourite scene, and most people, when they think about Storm Boy, will automatically go to the impactful scene where, spoiler alert, Mr. Percival is shot by poachers, and it is a really traumatic scene, and it gives, you know, I do remember sobbing and wanting the author to take it back. But I think my favourite scenes are when Colin describes Storm Boy wandering the landscape, and these few paragraphs are probably a classic example of Colin's writing. Storm Boy liked best of all to wander along the beach after what Hideaway called a big blow, for then all kinds of treasure had been thrown up by the wind and the wild waves. There, where the wide stretch of beach was shining and swishing with the backward wash, he could see the sea things lying as if they'd been dropped on a sheet of glass. All kinds of weed and coloured kelp, frosty white cuttlefish, sea urchins and starfish, little dead seahorses as stiff as starch, and dozens of different shells, helmets, mitres, spindles and dove shells, whelks with purple edges, ribbed and spiral cluster winks, murex bristling out of their frills of blunt spines, nautilus as frail as frozen foam, and sometimes even a new cowrie gleaming and polished with its underside as smooth and pink as tinted porcelain. In places the sand would be rucked and puckered in hard smooth ripples like scales. Stormbow liked to scuff them with his bare soles as he walked, or balance on their cool curves with the balls of his feet. I just love the language in that.
Yeah. And I think it's just done so evocatively that if you don't know what any of those things are, you will go and look them up.
Oh, and you want to know what a cowrie is, yeah. And to think that something's shining like porcelain and that the sand is rucked and puckered, you know, it's I remember reading those as a kid and not questioning it, but knowing it, knowing what it all meant. And as an adult reading it and going, oh, that is precisely what it is. So beautiful observation of landscape and recollection for a reader as well.
So we just have one last question. What contribution do you think that either of these books has made to children's literature? Do you still hear them being talked about, referred to today?
Look, I've just been touring for Book Week, and the amount of children, when I say what my favourite books are and I say Storm Boy, they're all putting their hand up and nodding. And look, admittedly, some of them may have an entrance through the movie, because it's been remade in recent times into a movie, and but it turns out a lot of the teachers are still reading Storm Boy in class because it's such a great read aloud text as well. You know, Colin Tilley wrote over 100 books, and there's over 380 editions of Storm Boy alone, so you know that it's still a very relevant book. And I can see echoes of Storm Boy sometimes in the writings of Tim Winton. Yeah, I sometimes sort of feel like, oh, I think I can see a glimpse there as well. But I think the fact that I think Storm Boy is having its day as well. You know, we need to be talking about interactions with the environment and early conservation and citizen science contributions as well. And also, I think the other thing is, you know, it's also tackling things like job security, traditional schooling versus homeschooling, coastal resources and impacts. So it's actually a book that can still be applied to some of the current themes that children are exploring as well, which makes it a timeless classic, an absolute treasure of an Australian book in my mind. And yeah. If we had to talk about magic pudding, I would say with magic pudding that, look, I don't hear it talked about as much now, but I certainly still see it in bookstores. And you've got the likes of, you know, Blinky Bill, May Gibbs and Magic Pudding still standing in the bookstores. I think it's still a nostalgic buy for generations of families. And I think the artwork complements the writing just as much as well. I am sort of sad it's not talked about as much, but I think there's still a great fondness there through the generations as well.
There really is. And having worked in a lot of bookstores, I can absolutely say that May Gibbs and the Magic Pudding and Australian classics are absolutely still like the number one gift, especially for christenings or as a really special gift, because you get such beautiful editions of them produced now. So I think the love is still going strong.
No, that's good to hear. Well, that's great. That I think, you know, we still need to hold these classics to keep us connected with stories of our past. I think it's, you know, we can never overlook that as well, which is probably why Magic Pudding still stands strong as well.
For sure. So before we go, Andrea, give us a quick rundown of what you're working on now, your latest book or project, and where we can find you online.
Sure. Well, I'm just finishing up the next companion text to my previous book, Jetty Jumping. So Hannah Somerville, the talented illustrator, and I are working on our second book together called Sunday Skating, which will be out in June 2023 with Hardy Grant. And then my book after that is a wonderful whimsical tribute to Melbourne skipping girl called Audrey Skips, and that's coming out with Midnight Sun Press in 2024 as well. I'm currently working on a young adult novel and a few other picture books in the offing, as well as a kind of exploring a series. So I'm keeping myself busy, and everyone can find me at andrearowe.com.au and on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter as well.
Thank you so much. It's been absolutely wonderful to chat to you, and I love that you chose these two Australian classics. I love that we're talking about Australian books. So thank you so much for coming on Kidlit Classics.
Thanks for letting me revisit something that two reads that meant so much to me, and I hope everyone enjoys sort of rediscovering them as well. This has been a wonderful chat. Thanks, Sam Allen.
You're most welcome. And listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. If you're loving Kidlit Classics, please like and share, and stay tuned for future episodes where we'll discuss even more wonderful children's literature. And if you are interested in being a guest and sharing your favourite book, please get in touch with me via socials or my website, SamanthaEllenBound.com.